Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
It is stupid out there.
It's hot.
That weather.
It doesn't know what it's doing. So we did, like, you know, the day of recording, it's like 25, 26, 27 degrees.
It was 30 yesterday.
I know.
Celsius.
And in Northern Ontario, they have a major winter storm.
So I'm going to talk about the trip. We were up in Temagami on the weekend.
Yeah.
We left, it was like plus 2 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
We got home, it was plus 30. What's going on? Go home, Mother Nature. You're drunk.
Yes.
Yeah. There's, wow, what a shift in temperature there. So what'd you do this week? You did some housework or lawn work?
Well, not lawn. I did some lawn work. So I overseeded the lawn and then watched grackles eat lawn seed all weekend long. So that's very expensive birdseed.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm resetting interlock brick in my side yard and stuff like that, because getting stuff done, cleaning it up.
Because you had nothing better
to
do.
Getting the weeds. No, this was... So Siobhan and her sister, they went to Montreal. And so they went up Saturday morning, came back Monday night by train. I've always wanted to do that nice train trip to Montreal. But they did it. Then they saw a Montreal game while they're in Montreal.
NHL hockey, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And so we all blamed her because they lost that night.
Mm-hmm.
But then they made up for it in Buffalo and
took now 8-7. They're going on to Carolina.
Final four.
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we took another trip.
Yes, you did.
So Tracy and I and Athena, the diggity dog, went north to Lake Obabaka in Temagami for the weekend. I went and spent some time with Alex Mathias. He's an elder in the Temagami First Nations. It's his birthday weekend, so usually a few people get invited up to have the birthday weekend with him and whatnot. There are a number of people there to help him celebrate. There's also some of those people who were there. Were then Monday morning heading in to do some portage maintenance.
Oh, yes.
And install some thunder boxes at interior sites. So it's, let's come up, celebrate Alex's birthday, and then head into the wilderness and just clean the portages.
Yeah. Good for
them. Pretty good gig if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
We got up early this Saturday morning. We had just went for the 3 days because Monday was a holiday here, right?
Yeah.
About an 8-hour drive up, 2 hours of that on really crappy roads.
Well, when I got here, it's like, whoa, that truck is filthy.
You like my tan truck? It was black when we left on Friday.
Oh, mud right up to the windows.
Right? You know what? There's Tracy. And I forgot our back window was open.
Oh.
Pure luck. When I see a mud puddle, like a deep puddle, I just gun it. Right? There's days where I hit the, and it's like right over the truck. And of course, it's all mud coming up and that. But yeah, just right up to almost, if it would have been any higher, it would have been right in the back seat.
Crawled around into like, inside the back window.
Yeah, right where the dog was, too. Yeah, a couple hours on these logging roads. Some spots, you know, you're going at a snail's pace and big rocks and holes and all that sort of stuff. Some mud, all, you know. Water levels are really high up there.
Yes, I've been seeing that. A lot of people are posting high water levels.
We passed one spot that, you know, Emerald Lake, and there's somebody's cabin on the right, and then the lake is across the road on the left.
Hmm.
And there's a dock. So you cross the road, go to your dock, jump in your boat. The dock is about 2 feet underwater, but the boat is still moored to the dock. So, yeah, you're getting your feet wet. You're going for a boat ride. No, it was a good drive up, like I say, except for that final 2 hours sort of thing. But got to Alex's place, set up her tent, got settled, walked around chatting with people we only get to see a couple times a year, right? So Sue Shepherd of Sue's Outdoor Crew was up there as well. And her and Tracy shared a bunkie while Athena and I slept in the tent away from everybody.
Yes, yes.
On our own, quietly, enjoying it. Middle of the night, get up, got to go have a pee. So I go to the tent. Athena comes out of the tent. She has her pee. I have my pee. And then I'm looking around because she tends to wander.
Yeah.
calling her, and then I see this head stick out of the tent. It's like she went out, had her pee, went back to bed.
You're on your own, buddy.
There's a bear. Don't keep me up. Sunday morning, woke up, got out on the water to try to catch some lake trout for breakfast. That didn't happen. Winds came up, pushing the canoe down the lake. You know when you get out there?
What day did you go up?
Saturday.
Saturday morning?
Yeah, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, because the Monday was the holiday.
Yeah.
I am sort of thinking I should have taken an extra day, the whole deal.
Yeah, yeah.
For, you know, 8-hour drive up and back, and you're there one full day.
Yeah.
But it's all good, right? But, yeah, the winds were coming up and pushing down the lake too fast. So you paddle up the lake, and then you want to do a nice, even troll back down.
Exactly. Just let the wind push you.
By the wind was just pushing too fast.
Oh.
Right?
Trolling so it's like,
by the time you get up there and cast out and everything's set just right, you're halfway back already. It's like, so I did that a few times and finally said, you know what? Forget this. I'm just heading back in. Because there is nowhere you can actually just out of the wind and fish sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. The wind was just blowing you anyway.
Yep.
Right? And the current and everything. So I eventually just called it and headed back to shore for regular breakfast. As opposed to.
And my first breakfast, then second breakfast.
We had these Happy Yak dehydrated meals.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
We've had them for a while now. And I don't know if they were expired or not. Mary Berry couscous.
Oh.
So you just that's add the hot water and there's berries and stuff. So that everything rehydrates or, you know, that sort of stuff. And the couscous and all that. And milk. There's milk powder in it and all that. So it actually turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually tasty. So I'll have to pick up a couple more of those.
I very rarely, if ever, buy freeze-dried breakfast meals.
We're usually oatmeal. Oatmeal coffee or tea. And
yes.
Off we go.
I guess the oatmeal packets are kind of freeze-dried or something. There's something.
Just add water.
Just dried oatmeal.
Anything I can just add hot water to, sit for a few minutes, and then
absolutely
wolf down and go is good. Good for me. I took the Novacraft 16-foot Prospector up.
That's you've used that a couple times already this year.
I've used it a couple times now because I didn't have to portage it.
Yeah.
I did put a post on our social media there on Facebook and that of me putting it on my truck by myself. Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Because I have the Yakima Dry Dock, which unfortunately they don't sell anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They do have another, like a T-bar, what do they call it, the long bar or something like that, which does the same thing. I don't think it's as sturdy as the...
You don't feel so?
Yeah. No. And it's thinner too. So I don't think it's as sturdy as the Dry Dock. I couldn't find a definitive answers to why they discontinued the Dry Dock. The Dry Dock looks like a giant letter Y with a bar between the top two arms, right?
Yeah.
So I just, that comes down. I put the front of the canoe on that, picked up the back and slid it across so that it was laying into the back of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I jumped into the back of the truck, lifted it up, put it on the first rear roof rack.
Yeah.
And then pushed the Dry Dock up, and the canoe moves forward onto the front roof rack.
Yeah.
Right? So then you put the pin in and the Dry Dock's up and your canoe's on top of the truck.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to lift a 100-pound canoe over your head to put it by yourself.
Yeah.
So this is perfect if you're solo tripping.
Mm-hmm.
There are other companies that make things like this, but like I say, Yakima makes the I want to say it's called the long bar. Now, so if you are driving a big truck or a small truck and are looking for some way to get the canoe up on top of there,
that's if you're height challenged, it's a good idea because it's easy to, like, even some SUVs, that's hard to get a canoe up on top. They can be kind of tall, right? So,
well, even if you're whoever's helping you is height challenged, because crazy comes up. Do you need some help? Really? I don't even think you'd come to the back, up to the back of the...
I'd have to flatten all four tires so you can reach it.
Here, let me get you a ladder to help. Oh, jeez. I put that up there. And like I say, it's for such a heavy canoe, it handled really well in the wind and it's solo.
That's where the weight of a canoe comes in handy.
Well, you know what? I paddled it with two people in it, and you can feel the weight if you're going against a current. You can feel that weight. You're pushing it. But when I was going into the wind on the lake, didn't really notice it.
It maintains the inertia.
It really did. And, I mean, with any canoe, if you get it off center and the wind starts hitting you in the bow,
starts to twist.
You're going to go. But I really didn't have that issue.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to paddle into the wind and the waves, no problems. I made good distance without having to struggle or tire myself out. Athena sat in it and enjoyed her day being paddled around the lake, right? She's not been in the canoe while I fished before, so I was kind of worried what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. A floppy fish lands in the bottom.
Yeah, well, I'm out there. I'm casting, and I'm changing stuff, and she's just looking at me. I put a pad there on the bottom to help give her some insulation between the bottom of the canoe and
that SP3 should be fairly insulating, though. Three layers of plastic. And
Yeah, I threw it on there anyway. Give her, and that sort of gives her, that's your place to lay or sit. Right? So she would sit, and she'd look around, and she'd lay down and rest her chin on the yoke
or
the gunwale.
How's it for twitchiness with her moving around? Because in lighter in lighter canoes, like, I've been in with dogs, and it's like, whoa. Yeah,
you wouldn't even know. Like I say, she was up and moving a bit. And but I've trained her as well not to be bopping all over the place. Right?
Don't run around.
So, I don't know what would happen if I actually caught a fish with her in the boat.
Yeah, you never know.
That's yet to be found out.
Mm-hmm.
She had a blast in it, and I was surprised at how well that thing handled in the wind solo.
Hmm.
And, of course, I was paddling from the bow seat, like, backwards, right? So I had the stern at the front and the bow at the back.
Yeah.
So I sat backwards in it, and no, it handled nicely. No problems in the wind. And did some good trolling with it and all that sort of stuff. I spent some time relaxing and chatting with people after I got back into shore there. Wind died down a little while later, so I went back out, this time without the dog. I'm not tempting. So Athena stayed with Tracy on shore there and paddled up the lake for a while to a spot which I fished before, tossed out a lure, and I latched into a pike.
Oh, okay.
Which, okie dokie. And I came up, it was only like a 21-inch pike, it was thin, and I'm like, this does not look healthy.
Hmm.
It had these bluish-white spots all over it.
Like
splotches, and like big areas of these splotches. I'm thinking, this thing's got some sort of disease. So I got the hook out, got a picture taken with it, and back in it went.
Mm-hmm.
Sue Shepherd was out in her kayak, by the way, at this point. And I totally forgot my phone back at camp. My phone, I use it for my
picture taking.
My camera or stuff like that. Totally forgot. So she came over and took a picture of the pike before I made sure she got pictures of the blue
spots.
Blue spots on it and that, because I wanted to find out what it is. So I did some
Googling
and researching. Blue spot, first described in 1983 in northern pike found in several waters of central Canada, and later reported in northern pike and muskie from Wisconsin and northern pike from Maine. Northern pike from Lake Champlain, which is Vermont and New York State there, have been documented with a disease called blue spot. Today, little is understood about this disease, and that's from 1983 to now. Blue spot is best described as palish blue-white granular skin lesions from 3 to 12 millimeters in diameter, caused by a virus, Esocid herpes virus 1.
Hmm.
Condition is clearly visible, particularly on dorsal skin surfaces of infected northern pike. So, and this thing had it on the top, the sides.
Yeah. So it's a herpes virus.
Mm-hmm.
So these fish are not practicing safe sex.
I'm thinking. That's why I didn't want to hang on to them very long. In a study performed in Wisconsin, the frequency of this disease was found as high as 34% in northern pike, 29% in muskie.
That's a lot.
Right? That's a lot of fish to be having some sort of weird issue. Characteristic blue spots were found on the fish for only a short time when water temperatures were between 36 Fahrenheit and 55 Fahrenheit. These distinctive spots disappeared shortly after the fish spawned when water temperatures reached 57.
So a lot of them have it. You just never know.
Right?
It's like cold sore season type thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't see the bit with cold sores all the time, but it's always there.
But it's always there. The incidence of blue spot was found to be different among lakes sampled. In general, larger, older pike were found less likely to have observable lesions.
They grew out of it.
The ability of blue spot to kill pike and muskie is unknown. Currently, it is believed that the disease poses little threat to populations of these species. Biologists continue to monitor this disease and assess any potential impact it may have to northern pike populations. Anglers are reminded to never transfer pike or any other fish from one body of water to another. This disease is not known to infect humans. Thoroughly cooking fish is recommended. So, after reading this, I still would not have taken that pike.
No,
and eaten it,
no.
Even if I did cook it.
Be very highly suspect.
Yeah, Doc, I'm not feeling great. I think I got fish herpes. What are all these blue spots all over my arms? That'd be kind of cool, but...
I'm half Smurf,
right? Yeah, I'm sitting there looking... The first thing I do is I'm putting this baby back because that does not look...
Don't even want to touch it.
Yeah, it's like...
Isn't that something? I've never heard of this.
Nope. If you Google it, Google. So, Google pike blue spot disease.
Yeah.
And you'll come up with these pictures and you're just like, ooh.
Unless you're, I don't know if it's so water temperature, certain temperatures. So unless you're early season or very late season fisherman, you probably would never even know about it.
Well, I'm thinking it's only in the spring because they said after they spawn.
So here you go. So
right. So if you're early spring fisherman, you have to catch and you accidentally catch one. Because, you know, you can't really just say, no, you don't bite my, there's a little sign on my hook saying, these fish cannot bite this lure.
Yeah,
check that out and see what it looks like.
So it goes away after they they spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah. But yeah, like I say, I saw that and
it's
and it goes. I wouldn't even think of eating it.
No, absolutely not. It's like, oh, I wonder if this is safe. No, I'm not even gonna try. But now that I know about it...
You're going to try it anyway.
In the high season, when the water temperature is warmer and these blue spots go away, you're still going to go, does this one have...
Right.
This...
Fish herpes?
SO Kid herpes virus 1.
Right?
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, I don't eat pike anyway.
No?
No.
There's so much bones.
There's so many bones.
They're so hard to clean.
And it's funny because I said it has... The texture and taste of
mud,
bad mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of people looking at me like, nailed it. Yeah, I'm one of those people like, I with my trout and stuff, I like to bake it in tinfoil by the fire mm-hmm. to get a nice bake. And that way, you can even pull the skeleton right out.
Yeah.
It's nice, flaky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that sort of is so good that way. You know, some spices on the inside and whatnot. Because filleting a fish is not one of my strong points. And when you add like multitudes of extra bones in there,
the
like
Y bones.
Pike,
yeah.
I'm not even gonna, the fastest I can get off that, unless there's somebody else that knows how to clean it and enjoys the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we were up in Woodland Caribou, there was a few of them there that one of the guys knew how to clean and a few of them liked the taste of pike.
Yeah.
So we caught a pike. Okay, there you go. All yours. Fill your booties. Keep it off my plate.
Yeah. Keep that away from me.
But if I take a mouthful of fish and I get a mouthful of bones, I'm done.
Yeah.
I am. It could be the, if it's the very first mouthful, the rest of that fish is ending up on your plate because I just can't eat it. That's why I'm very careful when I do my fish. Just make sure there's no bones.
As it is, I'm always, I don't know, paranoid of worms, fish with worms.
Oh, bass get them when it's really warm water, too.
Yeah.
Right? I've caught bass, filleted them, and
it's like, this you get meat's little moving.
Parasite worms in
your... Mm-hmm. They say the only way to get rid of that is you freeze it for, I don't know how many days, 20, 30 days. You have to freeze it, and the worms will die.
Mm-hmm.
They're still there, but or you have to cook the fish, like, right away.
Right away.
And
pick the worms out.
You hear about people going, hey, I caught a salmon. Let's do some sushi. It's like,
No.
No, you can't do fresh salmon sushi. Has to be frozen, pre-frozen, or else you're going to get parasites in you.
There's your salmon. Fill your boots, dude.
Yeah, you do.
So, like I say, that was the first fish I caught, and then I paddled back and changed up the lure to something else I was going to try, casted it out, and I started drifting. And that's when the fun came.
Oh.
As I like to call it, the one that didn't get away, but did. So I was trolling, and something just hammered my lure.
Oh, okay.
I was using a silver and brown Williams Wobbler.
Yep.
So anybody out there, that's what I was using. Gave a big fight. It would strip off the line, reel it back, and then strip off the line again. This thing was
fighting.
And so I knew it was going to be a big one. And, of course, Sue's in her kayak watching, like, you, such and such. eventually, I got it to the boat and got it into the net. Nice big lake trout. It was a good size. It would have fed a few people. I let out a huge woohoo, which echoed.
Oh, so everybody, hey, he's got something.
So Tracy, who's sitting at the tent, doing her knitting or whatever with the dog,
yeah,
said, yeah, I heard you, so I knew you got something. I'd forgotten, like I say, my camera. So there is pictures. Come up with a kayak, got a couple of snaps. My family is no pics, no proof.
Yeah.
Right? So you can catch something as long as your canoe, but if you don't have a picture,
yeah, exactly.
It did not happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It did no not proof. Happen. So I told her, you know, here's the lure I used and here's how I did it. And off that point, so past the point,
yeah,
drop it, you know, so far, and then just drift backwards and you'll hopefully, snag his little brother. And so off she went. It was 22 inches long, fat and heavy. I was ecstatic. Got the trout on my little blue ropes
stringer
there. Held it up so I could grab the loose end. It gave a massive flop, and over the side it went.
Oh.
Cut my finger, ripped,
yeah,
ripped the stringer right out of my hand, and down it went.
Oh.
All I saw was this fish just swimming for the bottom, trailing a blue stringer.
So he's got a, yeah. Oh. It would have been yummy.
Tracy said she heard from the shore, no, and a lot of bad words. I was not happy. Angry at myself, at the universe, at the fish. Disappointed, pissed off, in total disbelief
believe this just happened.
Like, it was just like, I got the fish there. And I was just about to grab the other end so that I could grab that. That's the end I would have tied to my,
yeah,
which I've done
thousands of times.
Yeah. Just grab that end, tie it on.
Tie it off the canoe.
And then throw the fish over,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, leave it in water.
I called it a day and headed to shore.
Yep.
Got on shore in a huff. Pulled my canoe up onto the beach. Threw my PFD into the bottom. The canoe, walked back to the tent where Tracy and Athena were sitting, sat down on my chair, clearly not in a good mood. Tracy says, what happened? I said, I'm not talking about it.
I'm not ready. I have to absorb, right?
An hour later, after I talked to a few people, it was a bit funny, but I was in a foul mood at that point. I am not talking about it. I was...
Later this summer, somebody's going to catch a giant trout, and it's like, I caught a fish, but it's got a stringer on it.
So there's a couple of people there, and one of the little kids was there, and they were talking about going out fishing.
Yeah.
And I said, his name is Bert. You'll notice he's on his leash. It's a blue string leash. There's a $20 bounty on him.
He's my pet. He's on a leash.
There's a $20. Because, you know, and I told Tracy, if anybody comes looking for me saying they I owe them 20 bucks, I need 20 bucks. big concern as well. The fish is down there with this stringer.
Yeah.
Hopefully his jaws, his back teeth can...
He'll eat around the stringer.
Cut it, you know, wear it out a little bit and he'll lose it.
Mm-hmm.
When the story got around and what happened, there were some laughs, some consoling on lost fish. Someone also imparted a story to me about a time they lost a whole stringer.
The entire thing?
The whole entire stringer. Oof. Of about 12 walleye. Oh. There was a group of them.
Yeah.
And they were all putting them on the same stringer.
Yeah.
And over the board it went.
Oh.
And he says, so don't feel so bad. I said, at least I'm not alone in my butterfingery. Yes. And now for the lesson in this story, why you should always carry a spare paddle while out canoeing.
You threw your paddle.
After I watched the fish depart and I used the most colorful language, then I threw my fishing pole into the front of the canoe to get it out of the way so I could clean up the net and the tackle and measuring tape, etc. My paddle was in the way, so as I muttered under my breath, I threw it to the front of the boat. It didn't make it to the front of the boat because it skipped off the yoke and straight out into the water. Out of reach, of course.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it was... this was followed by even more bad words. There comes a point where you're so pissed off, you start making words or combining existing
combining
words.
Swear words. Yeah, yeah.
If this weren't a family show, I'd give you an example. And I'm sure there are certain people out there listening going, dude, I feel your pain. There was this time back in 2000. And
but there is a picture of this fish, right?
Sue got a couple of pictures for me. I made sure. So if I had not had a spare paddle with me,
hand paddling,
I may not have been able to get to the paddle that went overboard because it was floating away from me faster than I could have paddled with my hands. So always bring a spare paddle.
Yes, yes.
That is the lesson I learned. Oh, man, I was so angry. I'm just stomping up the beach. Tracy's like, oh, boy. I'm sitting there eating potato chips and drinking a Caesar. It's like, oh, man, oh, man. So as always, like I say, sitting in the chair, pouting, eating my chips and having a beverage, float plane landed.
Oh, cool.
Offshore and headed to the beach where my canoe was. So I walked over, moved the canoe out of the way so it could land, and it was making a delivery of walleye fillets for Alex. And I'm thinking, well, if that's not just the universe poking the bear.
Since you've lost your fish.
So I walked up to the pilot and punched him. So yeah, I had a bunch of walleye there because the point was they were going to do a fish fry that night. So anybody that caught something, it would be added to sort of thing. And he had some boxes of books of Alex's books. The universe just poking the bear. If you have not read Alex Matthias's book, Tomogamy Stories, you need to. You can get it on the Friends of Tomogamy website, friendsofatomogamy.org/store. It's a good book. It talks about Alex growing up. And
don't know who posted it, but I saw that posting last week or just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a picture of him holding his book.
Yep. Yeah. And this one
is signed. There you go. To Kevin.
Mr. Callan. He says he's going to get one at the Toronto Door Adventure Show. Something happened. Oh. He didn't get one. So if you're going up there and you think about it.
Well, I thought about it.
Yeah. Kevin needs one.
It's going to tell him to spell his name wrong, but.
That'll be funny.
So there's pictures of me standing on the float plane, on the float.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his name was Bob, the pilot.
Yeah.
He's an OPP officer. So he was taking boxes of books out of the back, pass them to me, and then I was passing them to people on shore.
Oh, okay.
Sort of deal. Between my tent and the beach, there was a big pond of water because of flooding.
Yeah.
So we put everything in my canoe, the books in my canoe, shoved it across that pond.
Yeah.
And then took them out there right in Alex's place.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. It's not something you see every day, right?
No.
So after that, the plane dropped off its cargo and he headed out. We sat around chatting for a while. We made dinner and then we went and sat around the communal fire and chatted for a while. Weather was calling for rain overnight and everything. So I figured, you know what? I'm going to put the canoe up on top of the truck now because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to do it when it's raining.
Yep, there you go.
Or everything's soaked. And so got as much done as I could pack up and then went and sat around the fire some more and chatted and called it a night. It did rain overnight, but stopped around 7 a.m., which was perfect because that's when we got up. Misty rain after that. I set up my camera and tripod and took a couple of photos and stuff like that of Obabaka and
oh, nice.
Misty morning and all that sort of stuff. Before packing up the rest of the stuff in the truck, saying our goodbyes and starting the long slog home. Again, the group that was heading out to, on the maintenance trip, they were just making their final gear prep and getting ready to head out shortly after us. Week in the backcountry clearing portages and installing thunder boxes, and Al was actually going with them, which is pretty cool. Bad roads were made worse in a couple spots due to the rain.
Oh, yes.
The mud and everything like that was... You're sitting there, you don't want to go too fast because there's rocks and stuff, but if you don't, you're bogging down in the mud. So you're just like... And the back end swings around a little bit and shooting mud everywhere. That was awesome. Made it home, unpacked all our gear, made dinner, and sat down and watched Kevin Callan's YouTube video about our Shirley Lake trip from the year before, or the week before. So, yeah. All in all, great weekend. Definitely should have taken another day on all of that, but maybe gone and find Bert, my pet fish. So... Yeah. So if anybody's an Obabaka, comes across a fish.
That's fish with a leash on it.
With a leash. His name's Bert. Let me know.
He answers to Bert.
Yeah. Yeah. There's $20 for it.
Hey, Bert.
For you. Hey, buddy, Bert.
Well, all in all, it sounds like a good weekend.
It was a good weekend.
It'd be a hoot sitting on shore saying, ooh, that guy's having a questionable weekend.
Right?
It started with a woohoo and ended up with a whole lot of swearing.
It was a whole range of emotions within 10 minutes.
It was like, no, 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 no. It's like, uh-oh, he just hooked himself.
Right? It's like, yeah, he just, I cannot, and I can still see it in my brain, that fish just, I'm outie. Heading straight down and that string following him down there.
Yeah.
Butterfingers. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was a good size. That's probably one of the bigger trout I've caught, too.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because usually I catch them, they're around anywhere 15 to 18 inches.
Yeah.
But that was like 22 inches.
Pretty
and
big,
it was
eh?
Fat. It was solid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, that, like I say, those would have been a couple of really good fillets on that.
Mm-hmm.
And fed a few people, so. I guess we'll never know.
So now with a virus, why would a walleye be more predisposed to catching that virus than other types of fish? What is
you mean
it?
A pike?
Yeah.
Pike and muskie.
Pike and muskie.
Yeah.
So it must, like a virus is a virus, right? It should affect everything. But this virus just affects pike.
I don't know.
Curious why like a
I'm not a fish biologist. I just... know how to Google.
But it's curious, right? Or maybe all fish get it, but only the pike show signs of being infected.
Hmm. Maybe you can't see it on the other fish, but they're still infected.
It's still infected, yeah.
Because these are like neon blue, sort of like they stand out.
Oh yeah, it's obvious, eh?
Yeah. Just Google it and you'll see what it's all about. Anyway, so yeah, so now this coming weekend, I'm actually at home because I have yard work and stuff to be doing.
It's that time of year.
Yeah. But two weekends in a row out. Nice. Algonquin, Tomogly. Yeah. And like I say, I was very happy with how that Novacraft prospector did for me. Like I say, soloing was the big question.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, no, it turned out well.
Excellent. Right on.
Let's go around the world to Gambia.
Around the world.
If you're looking to go somewhere different.
Mm-hmm.
Kayaking through Gambia's rivers is one of the best ways to explore the West African nation's natural beauty and cultural heritage. Rivers are teeming with wildlife and offer a unique perspective on the local ecosystem. Be it an adventure junkie or a nature lover, kayaking here will give you an unforgettable experience.
That's just south of Senegal.
Mm-hmm. And it's small. It's not a big place.
Oh, it's near Dakar, where the rally is.
Yeah. Here are some of the best rivers to...
That's a big river. Holy cow.
Right. It goes from one end of the country to the other. That's from the ocean to the...
And the country's borders follow the river. That's that's a huge
river. And there's little... If you zoom in...
Yeah.
There's little rivers that go off of it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of water.
Start Googling, buddy. It's got your name written all over it.
Wow.
Derek's going to Gambia.
That's a really big... It's really wide at the lower portion.
Yep.
Huh.
It's one of the only ones that allow actually shipping.
Yeah, it's big enough for it.
Big enough for it.
Oof.
So a list of some of the best rivers to explore on your next kayaking adventure in Gambia. The Gambia River. As the country's lifeblood running through its heart... It provides a long stretch for kayakers to explore diverse landscapes and wildlife. From mangroves to savannas, the river's banks are home to a variety of habitats. Kayaking this river gives you a chance to spot crocodiles, hippos, and various bird species in their natural habitats. River is famous for its calm waters and dense vegetation along the banks. Kayakers can enjoy peaceful paddling while observing monkeys swinging from trees and colorful butterflies fluttering around.
I've heard hippos are super dangerous.
And fast in the water.
Yes.
So do you want to come across the crocodiles or the hippos?
It's
just to see those swinging monkeys. I would go there just to be paddling and watching monkeys go swinging over top.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that just for the monkeys.
So there's a in Florida, don't they have a?
Yeah, we talked about that island thing there.
Yeah,
of monkeys,
a whole bunch of monkeys that were imported back in the 1800s. And now there's a whole colony of them, and they play and dive into the water.
Yep.
Hmm.
Then there's the Babalong Wetlands. Babalong Wetlands provide an amazing kayaking experience with their maze of waterways surrounded by lush greenery. This area is a bird watcher's paradise with numerous species flocking here all year round. Kayaking through these wetlands gives you an opportunity to get up close with nature while enjoying the serenity of the unique ecosystem. So if you're into bird watching, that's the place for you.
Huh.
Nyumi National Park has several rivers that are perfect for kayaking adventures. These waterways cut through mangrove forests teeming with wildlife like red colobus monkeys. Again, the monkeys!
Mm-hmm.
And various bird species. Paddling through these rivers offers an immersive experience into one of Gambia's most biodiverse regions, with opportunities for both exploration and relaxation amid stunning natural scenery. That's pretty cool, though. And I don't know what it is about monkeys in the wild that just seem like something cool to see.
Probably because we don't see it here, right? So it's very unique.
Yeah.
Just like hippos.
Well, we don't see the polar monkeys swinging, swinging on by.
Yeah.
Through the pines.
Yeah.
With the lumberjacks.
It would be neat. It would be really neat.
Right?
But there's a, what is it, macaque? What is the monkeys that are in Japan? And,
and you go to the hot springs.
Yeah, they're always hanging out in the hot springs. They get snow on top of their heads, and they're hanging out in the hot water.
Yeah, yeah. the Gambia River in Western Africa is 700 miles or 1,120 kilometers long, rising in the Republic of Guinea and flowing westward through the Gambia into the Atlantic Ocean. Its major tributaries are the Sandugu and Sofanyama. The Gambia is one, and as it's not Gambia, it's the Gambia.
I see that on the map, right? Yeah.
The Gambia is one of the finest waterways in Africa and the only Western African river that is easily accessible to ocean-going shipping. From its source in the highlands of the Fouta Djallon, the Gambia follows a winding course to its mouth, which is the Ria, or Drowned Estuary. Dividing and reuniting of river channels, a phenomenon known as braiding, has created several islands along the river's middle course, of which the two largest are Elephant Island and McCarthy Island. River is joined by numerous creeks called bolongs, and the largest of these being Bintang Bolong, which flows into it from the south. Width of the river valleys varies considerably along its course. River valley is cut into a plateau of sandstone dating from the Paleogene and Neogene times, about 65 to 2.6 million years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, so a couple of years. Dense mangrove swamps fringe the lower river for 60 miles, 97 kilometers inland, after which freshwater swamps and salt flats on low-lying stretches alternate with dense clumps of small trees and shrubs that line the cliffs. On the higher slopes of the riverbank, swamps and shrubs give place to parkland and tall grass. The wild oil palm grows along the valley bottom. Vegetation of the river and its creeks provide a favorable habitat for insects, animals, and birds. A lot of birds from the research and pictures that I've seen. A lot of different birds. Swamps provide a breeding place for mosquitoes and tsetse flies. Those are the ones that get you malaria, I think.
Tsetse flies?
Yeah. River abounds in fish and river creatures, including the hippopotamus and the crocodile. Among the 400 bird species that have been recorded are the kingfisher, the cuckoo, the swallow, the heron, the sunbird, which I've never heard of before, the hawk, and the grass warbler. So you can check off a lot of your...
Yeah.
Your bird.
If you're a bird watcher, right? You just,
get that book resume. And just add to click that one, saw that one, saw that one, saw that one. The swampy region closest to the river, with its dense masses of mangrove trees, often growing more than 100 feet or 30 meters high, abounds in wildlife and has been being of little use for either agriculture or human settlement. The grass-covered river flats, known as Banto Pharos, of the lower river are rendered useless for cultivation by the salt water that periodically inundates them, and settlements on them are few.
Hmm.
So this is like a kayaker's dream.
Yeah.
To go there and... they don't mention snakes.
I'm sure there's some.
I'm sure there's a couple, because they say, wildlife. But except for the hippos and the crocodiles...
That was so, I never knew that. It's just, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, I think it's the predominance of social media now. Before, I never knew that hippos were such a dangerous and angry creature.
Right?
But yeah, they will chase you. And I've seen videos of them. They are fast and sleek in the water.
Yep. They will hammer the boat.
Yeah.
They will bite. And I mean, you look at their mouths, they'll just bite you in half sort of thing.
You ever see them? People throw an entire watermelon in their mouth and just destroy the watermelon.
Destroy them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, yeah. And it's the crocodiles that get me. I would probably, yeah, I'd rather face the hippo, I think.
I don't know.
The lesser of two evils.
Maybe it's faster with the hippo. You'll die quicker. It's easier.
Maybe. But I mean, the crocodile is going to grab you, take you under, and do that.
Yeah, see, the crocodile sees you as food, mm-hmm. whereas the hippo, if you don't anger the hippo...
Yeah, stay away from
because
it.
Because they just eat, like, plants.
And people, apparently.
And people. Yeah. Well, no, I think they're just territorial. They'll attack a person if you ear
something. I think that's what it is. It's territorial,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I've seen people paddling and... There's some videos, and they go, okay, we need to get off and climb a tree. Yes. And then you see the hippos going by, and they will not leave that tree until the hippos go by.
Yeah.
And then back into the boats, and off they go.
Oof.
I think it's got to be territorial.
It's got to be, yeah.
The crocodiles, they're just idiots.
They're looking for food.
They're just looking for food.
They just want to eat,
Yeah. Hey, buddy, you using that leg? Come on over. Give me a hug. I only need one of them. So if you're looking for a total different kayaking experience, go to the Gambia in Western Africa. Sounds pretty cool, actually.
It does. So it's,
monkeys.
What's wild is that country must have been formed around the Gambian River,
mm-hmm.
because you see the borders of that country, and it's like it follows the river.
Yeah.
It's just a long, narrow country, and it just surrounds the river.
Yeah, and it all looks like... Green Park.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The whole thing.
Derek, you need to go to the Gambia.
I know, and befriend a hippo.
Bring me back a monkey. Bring me back a monkey. I think, if I remember correctly, my mom said her uncle or her great uncle had a monkey.
Really?
In a cage. This would have been back in the 50s, I guess.
Back when it wasn't illegal.
Back when it wasn't illegal and people didn't care. But he would, whoever came in the house, he would throw poop at.
Oh!
Well, it kept the visitors down. Are we having company this weekend? No, because of your monkey. Prepare the monkey! There's people at the door. Prepare the monkey.
He's locked and loaded.
Is there poop for the monkey? I don't know what it is about my like monkeys. So go to the Gambia, look it up and check it out and see what's all there. I think if you're really into world travel and checking new places out, that's the place for you to go kayaking.
Mm-hmm.
Global adventure tourism.
It's becoming
which is part
thing.
Of going to the Gambia.
Yep.
The market has become one of the fastest growing sectors within the international travel and tourism market, owing to experiential travel, outdoor adventures, and cultural immersions. As per the Allied Market Research Report, the global adventure tourism market was valued at $324.9 billion in 2022. And is expected to generate revenue worth $2 trillion with a T. Trillion.
That's incredible.
By 2032.
It's funny how stuff like this grows suddenly. Like I remember through our research for this podcast, we started discussing where there was a ton of companies in the early 70s that were created. So you like magazines. So you're talking, canoeing, kayaking, whitewater, and whatever, as well as a lot of mountaineering, skiing, a lot of ski magazines. And so in the early 70s, I think it was people found that they had spare money and spare time, and they're doing a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's this new push with just all outdoor and adventure tourism. And I'm sure that has to do with the explosion of social media. And so you see these bursts of growth within that market and within that economy. And so I find it amazing just globally, this global adventure tourism thing is just exploding over the last, well, a lot of it really came out around COVID, I think, and where it just, a lot of people are like, hey, I'm locked in. I'm going to go get out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I can socially distance under a tree instead of like in my living room type thing, right?
Yep.
So it's amazing the growth and how fast it's grown in the last few years.
Well, there's also been a paradigm shift in global travel trends towards adventure and wellness travel.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Soft adventure segment leads the market, offering moderate risk experiences like kayaking, appealing to a wide demographic, including older people and family travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Hard adventure segment includes activities such as whitewater rafting, is growing rapidly among high adrenaline seekers.
Exactly.
So all the aspects of getting out there paddling are...
It's a multitude. There's so much, yeah.
But $2 trillion by 2032. Yeah.
That's just people flying someplace. And so this would be like travel, food, accommodations, mm-hmm. time on the river, time with outfitters, and so on. It's a lot of money that gets spread around, right?
Right. We're in the wrong industry.
Yeah.
So, do you like flying?
I generally do, yeah.
Do you like water sports? Whitewater rafting?
I do.
Well, my friend. A high-flying Troutdale, Oregon business is offering a new route that showcases gorgeous views and connects people to a whitewater rafting excursion. Envy Adventures, founded by Corey Rust in 2017, based out of Troutdale Airport, will debut a summer round trip flight to Maupin. Folks will take off in Troutdale, see the sights, spend a half day whitewater rafting on the Deschutes River with Deschutes River Adventures, and then come home by plane.
Hmm.
The new route will be offered from June 1st through September 17th. Flights leave from Troutdale at 8 a.m., $349 U.S. per person, with a minimum of 4 people required for the trip, and a total of 5 can go on the plane. Cessna planes can seat up to 5 people, fly lower than commercial airliners, offering a unique view. Columbia River Gorge, it is 1,000 feet up.
Ooh.
Between 2,500 feet above Portland, which is just the outskirts of where the Troutdale is, the outskirts of Portland, and between 6,500 and 9,000 feet above Mount Hood.
Oh, wow.
Yep. They fly 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. It says, a lot of people have been in the gorge, the Columbia River Gorge, seen it all, but this is a different vantage point, Rust says. You have to see it from above with your own eyes.
That would be amazing.
But we've done that. You go over and you see the stuff from above.
Yep.
And then you're at river level and you mm-hmm. see it from that aspect. And
yep.
Both of them completely different views. They do offer different flights as well. And you can not just head. So you take off and head right to the Deschutes.
Yep.
They will take you, if you want to add... There's 3 different Mount St. Helens, Hood, I can't remember the other one. Different mountains that they can fly over as well on your way. So you can customize your trip. Take your Oregon adventure to an entirely new level with the Float and Fly, the most unique and thrilling combo experience offered by Envy Adventures. And Envy is ENVI. Adventures. One-of-a-kind half-day excursion combines a scenic airplane flight from Troutdale with an exhilarating whitewater rafting trip down the legendary Deschutes River, giving you 2 bucket list Pacific Northwest experiences in a single unforgettable day. Your adventure begins at the Troutdale Airport just outside of Portland, at the gateway of the Columbia River Gorge, where you will board an Envy Adventures aircraft for approximately 45-minute scenic flight to Maupin. Soak in sweeping aerial views of the Oregon landscape as your experienced pilot guides you south towards the higher desert terrain of central Oregon. Once you land, you'll meet up with an expert guide of the Deschutes River Adventures, Envy's rafting partner in Maupin, for a shuttle into town and a briefing before you hit the water. The approximately 3.5-hour rafting excursion covers 13 miles of the iconic Deschutes River, taking you through heart-pumping Class 3 rapids, including the famous Boxcar Rapid, and the challenging Class 4 Oak Springs Rapid. That'll get you going. One of the most exciting stretches of whitewater rafting in Oregon. Whether you're a seasoned rafter or a first-time thrill seeker, this guided trip delivers an adrenaline rush like no other. The Float and Fly is an ultimate Oregon outdoor experience for adventure lovers, groups of friends, couples, and anyone searching for something far beyond the ordinary. It's one of the most exciting and memorable things to do near Portland, combining the very best of air travel and river adventure in one spectacular outing.
You're sounding like an advertisement.
This, right? Well, this is what's on their site. But this would be cool for, like, if you know how the people do the bridal and wedding party trips, right? So they go, hey, listen, you know, like, what was the one where they went to Thailand? The movie.
Yeah. The Bachelor?
The Bachelor. Yeah, Bachelor Party. That's
the Bachelor Party.
I'm totally blanking on what that's called because it's been so long. So, like, something like this would be a great Bachelor Party gig.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, exactly right.
Nonstop flight from Portland to Deschutes. These are the things that are included. Private group pickup and drop off at the airport in Maupin. Half day guided river adventure down the Deschutes River. Food is not included,
which is reasonable.
Yeah. Bring your water bottle, hat, sunglasses, sunscreen, shoes that can get wet, not flip flops because they'll fall off. Quick dry clothing or a swimsuit, and non cotton clothing works best. Do not bring phones, keys, wallets, towels, electronics, and backpacks.
Yeah.
After conquering the river, you'll be shuttled back to Maupin Airport for a scenic return flight to Troutdale. Perfect way to wind down after a day packed with adventure.
Interesting, eh?
And like I said, if you go to envyadventures.com for more information, more trips and stuff, and they have different, you can customize it to go see different things on your way, that sort of deal. ENVI Adventures for more info. But that sounds pretty cool, though.
It does.
Let's get to the airport. We'll fly for 45 minutes, see things from the air.
We're going to see the route. We're going to see the river. We're going to see some mountains, some amazing mountains.
Then we're going to whitewater for 3.5 hours and then get back on that plane.
And fly back.
And back home.
That's awesome.
What a great day.
So this is coastal Portland, Oregon. So Seattle, Portland area. So, yeah, that's a
bit more inland, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit more inland. So, you're within the bounds of the Olympic Mountains and area, between the Rockies and the Olympics. So, it's a very beautiful area.
Yeah.
That's very cool. $350, that's not bad.
On your way back from the Gambia,
yes.
Stop there. Stop in. Let me know how that one works out, too, would you? What's the problem with this? There's just way too many.
Too many things.
Too many things.
Yeah, we need to live about 1,000 years to...
Right? One last little thing that was I've been seeing lately, not really paddle-related, but environment-related. So the rest of the UK has resisted calls to make builders install bricks that provide nesting for swifts and other endangered birds.
Oh, that's interesting.
Swift bricks will be installed in all new buildings in Scotland. After the Scottish Parliament voted in favor of a law to help endangered cavity nesting birds.
We did a walk. I think we talked about this last week. Anyways, we walked along the shore of Lake Ontario with high mud cliffs above us. Mm-hmm. We saw all kinds of swift nesting sites.
And swallows and all that.
Swallows in the wall there. It was really cool to see them jumping in and out of the holes and flying around. So very cool.
Scottish Government and MSPs across parties backed an amendment by Scottish Green Mark Ruskell to make swift bricks mandatory for all new dwellings where reasonably practical and appropriate. Swift move contrasts with the 4-year battle to bring the hollow 35-pound bricks into law in England. The Labour government last year rejected an amendment to make the bricks mandatory for new buildings, instead introducing them into planning guidance, meaning there's no legal obligation on developers or planning authorities to provide them. Welcome the decision to make swift bricks mandatory, Minister Gillian Martin said. This iconic species was once a very common sight across Scotland, particularly in urban areas, but they are under threat, declining by 60% since 1995.
Oof, that's a crash in population. That's
right? That's huge. 60% gone. Has led them to being on the red list of birds of conservation concern. Swift joins our communities every summer, but they're becoming rarer everywhere. I'm looking forward to seeing every new building in Scotland host a family of Swifts in the future, and I hope the legislation here will inspire lawmakers across the UK to get on with it, give Swifts a home. Britain Swifts, there are fewer than 40,000 pairs remaining.
Oh.
Increasing loss of natural nesting habitat thanks to countless renovations and the massive government funding insulation schemes that have gone into mitigation. England, Wales, Northern Ireland must follow Scotland's lead. So, yeah, I guess the renovations and that have disturbed and destroyed, like on the houses and that where they used to nest and that, have destroyed those nesting spots. So now they have nowhere to nest. Can't make a nest. You can't lay your eggs.
Yeah.
Can't lay your eggs. You can't increase the population. Bricks will be introduced in Scotland after a 12-month consultation to ensure there is an appropriate building standard for the bricks. Can't just make a hollow brick. As well as providing nesting places for swifts, help other endangered cavity nesting birds, including sparrows, starlings, and house martins. In Gibraltar, an important point on the swift seasonal flyway between Europe and sub-Saharan Africa, swift bricks have helped populations recover.
Interesting.
Professor John Cortez, the Environment Minister of Gibraltar, said, Scotland's decision on swift bricks is a significant step in ensuring the survival of this species, which has come to depend so much on us. On the rock, we have had this policy for several decades. We have seen a declining population of swifts first stabilize and then increase.
Cool. That's they're saying, well, just by the percentages here too. So they say there's 40,000 pairs remaining, 60% reduction. So that's 60,000 swifts that are missing. And so with bird populations everywhere, there's an ebb and flow with it. Like when we were using, what was it, DDT and so on, mm-hmm. which caused thinning of shells. We had a crash in populations with bald eagles, hawks, cormorants, and whatever. And now that we have banned the use of some of these pesticides, a lot of these populations are rebounding and recovering. And it's good that we are participating in the recovery of the damage that we caused in the first place.
Well, even on a canoe trip, when you're paddling about and seeing eagles...
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing them as a kid.
No,
I don't. And now, like, the majority of trips I'm on, when I was on Shirley Lake, we saw an eagle.
Yeah.
John Brower, the guy I go paddling with a lot, there's a lake we went to, Nogies Creek, and there's a small part of that where there's a big nest.
Hmm.
And right now, there's a nesting pair and an eaglet.
Nice.
So, it's cool to see that sort of thing. And, I mean, you're thinking, it's just a tiny little bird, but you know what?
It's part of the ecosystem.
It really is.
It all plays this part. And even as much as, like me, as much as I hate mosquitoes, it's a huge feeder. It's part of the food chain. It's important. Even the mosquitoes are important, right? To feed the birds and the whatever that eats them. So bats and birds and...
Lions, tigers, elephants, oh my.
Sure. everything
cool.
Finds its place in the ecosystem.
That article... hit my social media feeds so many times last week. I figured, you know what? If it's hitting it that many times, it must be that pretty important. Yeah. So I thought
good for them.
Give a little mention to it this week. And that's all I have this week. You got anything else?
I don't, but I do need a remark. When I was reviewing the notes for tonight, I was thinking, wow, we're going to have way too much material. It's almost perfectly timed.
Right? Remember when our shows used to be 52 minutes?
I know, and we had to adhere to that specific amount of time.
Way
not 53,
back in the day.
Not 51.
52.
Yeah.
And but now we're just all willy-nilly all over the place.
I know. When Kevin Callan comes on, it's like we make three episodes out of it.
Right? It's a 9-hour tour. you got nothing else you say?
Nothing, Dad.
Alrighty, well, if you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can stream or download our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.